Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
There are lots of highs and lows in sport, so how do you cope with all of them with a clear, authentic, grounded Christian faith when you're the captain of the Wallabies and you have Alan Jones yelling at you as your coach? My next guest seemed to manage it all just fine. He's known as one of the gentleman players of the game, Nick Farr-Jones. Just the other day, I heard a commentator reminiscing about the times Nick would have a word or two with the ref, and he'd always end it with "Sir." His passion outweighed the pressures, his faith always firm. Nick played rugby for Australia for 10 consecutive years. Never to be dropped, he was captain for 5 of those years and led our country to win rugby's holy grail, the Rugby World Cup in 1991. Who at the time could ever forget it? He's a member of the hallowed Wallaby Hall of Fame. Nick's here as we continue our series on Aussie ambassadors, and he's a great one. Nick Farr-Jones, welcome to Open House.
Lee, it's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here. Can I start this way by asking you the greatest high and the greatest low in your career? Perhaps first the greatest high.
I assume you're talking about the rugby career, which lasted 10 years, because now that I'm sort of beyond 50, there's been 5 decades.
Yes.
The greatest high, look, it's hard to go past being in the right place at the right time to captain a Rugby World Cup winning team, and the first time we Aussies won it. So at the end of the day, on my rugby tombstone will be that I was lucky enough to be in that right place at the right time. But look, there was many highs. I mean, for your listeners, you know, as a kid who grew up in the south of Sydney, played soccer, went to a school where they really only focused on rugby. I got thrown a number 9 jersey. To cut to the chase, I wasn't good enough to play first 15. I saw my first rugby test the year before I played one. So I wasn't someone who grew up dreaming to pull on the gold jersey from a young age. It just so happened very quickly in 1984. So I suppose one of the highlights would have to be when I was first selected to play for Australia, my first test at Twickenham, where we ended up winning the Rugby World Cup 7 years later. That would have been one of the great highlights, to play alongside people like Mark Eller, Andrew Slack as my captain. Many, many highlights, but I suspect it's those two. You know, your first cap as a kid who really never dreamed and had a vision for being a Wallaby, but sort of had it thrust upon him, and the wonderful passport to the world it gave you, the great friendship, mateship, fantastic game, and all those great aspects of amateur rugby.
What a wonderful answer. So I hate to ask you about the greatest low, but the greatest low and how you coped with it.
Many lows as well. You know, one was obviously we started the inaugural World Cup 1987 as the favourites to win it. We'd knocked over the Kiwis in a series on their soil the year before, and really the wheels fell off the Wallaby train that year, and it was a very disappointing year for it. It was after that year that Alan Jones got dumped from the job. It wasn't Alan's fault. You know, we're all contributed to a miserable year, but that was certainly a low. But I suspect what keeps me awake at 3 in the morning these days, Lee, I mean, I've cut the umbilical cord some time ago from rugby, and I love I chair New South Wales rugby, the community side of rugby, my young boy plays. You know, I enjoy watching from a distance. If I've got any regrets sitting here 20 years into retirement, it's that we didn't beat the British and Irish Lions. You know, they're coming out here in about 6 weeks' time. It is one of the greatest privileges to play against that team. In 89, I captained the Wallabies against them. They only come to Australia every 12 years, so you really get one roll of the dice against those fellas. We won the first test convincingly at the Sydney Football Stadium. We went up to Ballymore in Brisbane 2 weeks later and got bashed up physically. You know, they really turned on a stink, and my only regret, it wasn't the tactics that they used, it. We didn't stand toe-to-toe. We lost that game narrowly, and then we came down for the third and deciding test, and, you know, we led with a few minutes to go. People remember it.
Yes.
As the day Campo sort of got himself in a bit of trouble, but, you know, I went in a great defence of Campo. People blamed him for the loss, but we had 79 other minutes in which to win that game, and, you know, 2 years later, he went on to be the absolute player of the tournament in 91 and just about won it for us. So, certainly wasn't Campo's mistake, but people remember that third test. We should have got over the line, we didn't, and that would have to be the greatest low for me.
You mentioned Alan Jones. How would you describe him as a coach, a leader, a person?
Unique. There's no doubt he's a unique person. He's a terrific person in many ways. You know, we all know that he's given his time to so many great causes. My two national coaches were Bob Dwyer, who followed Alan, and Alan. They were very different people. Bob was more of the focus on the team, but Jones had a unique ability to get the best out of an individual. If you wanted to be in the Jones team, you had to be prepared to give a bit of blood, sweat and tears. You had to work your butt off, and you had to do it his way. And that's the way it was. And for 3 years, it was very, very successful. 84, 85, 86. Look, I'd have to say, and maybe Alan would agree, that I think in 87, I'm sure my teammates, most of my teammates would agree, there was some favouritism. There was favouritism within the team, and you cannot be a leader of a team or a coach of a team when there's a perception within the team that people are being favoured. We call it the JIC, the Jones Inner Circle. A lot of the great team spirit that had been developed over the previous years disappeared. Now, I'm not blaming Alan. We all played like busted
bums.
But
you can't lead like that.
No, look, I don't think so. And that certainly was my perception. But I feel honoured and privileged to have been mentored by Jones for 4 years. He was a terrific coach. My discipline, my hard work. You know, I grew up swimming as a young kid. I then went to middle distance running. When you do those two disciplines, you don't mind a bit of hard work.
Yeah.
And then it fitted the Jones way perfectly.
I read somewhere where he didn't want anything said about Christian faith.
Well, it wasn't you didn't want anything said, but in 1986, I think it was, Paul Dalton made me captain of the New South Wales Waratahs out of the blue. Dalton got summons to Jones's house. It's recorded in Peter Fitzsimons' biography on me, and basically, you know, was castigated. One of the things that Jones said is, "Don't you understand he's a Christian?" As though there was something wrong with that, and I couldn't be a leader of any note.
What would have been the perceived problem with that?
I don't know. I hear Alan talk. He's an interesting product of a very strong, I think, Roman Catholic mother. So he would have grown up, I think, with a semblance of church life. But, you know, I think he probably, and this is just guessing, but I suspect that from what he said to Dalton, that he would see a Christian as someone who needs a crutch, needs a, you know, has a problem in life and needs a God and a saviour to lean upon, to seek support from.
And it's not like that?
Well, not for me. I mean, it certainly it is. I mean, you know, the Holy Spirit was given to us to be a counsellor and to be someone that we could go to get wisdom and you know, and it's fantastic. You know, I get great peace and comfort from my relationship with God through Christ. But when I came to Christ and accepted salvation when I was about 17 years of age, Lee, my life was far from broken. My life was going wonderfully well. I'm the product of a fantastically warm family, parents who sacrificed enormously. I had great friends. I loved life. It just so happened that I started to go to church out of a strange experience and started to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I accepted it.
What was the strange experience?
Oh, look, it was just that I'd been breaking the law. At the age of 17, I'd been down the Cronulla League Club having a few beers. Of course, I wasn't allowed to do that at the age of 17. But after that, my mate, we lived at Cronulla at the time, we decided to go up and have a pizza in Carringbar. We met two beautiful women. They were just having a coffee after church at Carringbar Baptist Church. I was desirous to see them again, and the deal was that if we're going to see them again, I had to turn up to church next Sunday. So I've always said that God moves in mysterious ways.
You wouldn't be alone with that kind of story, mate.
Absolutely. I mean, there's plenty of ways to attract you to the gospel.
So notwithstanding what Alan Jones might have thought, how do you combine those two kind of parts of your life, the faith thing and being the captain of the Wallabies?
Oh, look, I think it's very compatible. I've got no problem in life talking about my faith, talking openly about it, trying to live day by day to be a witness, to be a blessing on other people. You know, it wasn't incompatible. Look, rugby touring was a great way of life. I don't have a white halo around my head, Lee. You know, there were times when I wasn't happy with the life that I was living. My 34 or 5 years as a Christian, I mean, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster ride. There's been fantastic years, fantastic months. But it's a little bit like my rugby career. There were times when I wasn't happy with the way I was playing. There were times in my Christian life where it certainly wasn't leading a wonderfully good Christian life. So was I always the exemplary Christian? Of course not. But we all know that when you become a Christian, you don't read in the Bible that you get a red carpet ride. You know, the whole concept was that you're still prone to sinning, but there is an exit to that. You can get reconciliation again through the blood of Christ.
I often think, not only in sport, but especially in sport, but in life generally, to have that sense of a bigger picture, that there's something else going on here, well beyond the issue or the problem or the crisis of the moment.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that. And people should feel that they can get great peace with a relationship in God. I mean, you're certainly not immune from issues and problems and crises, but amongst that, you can still have a great peace.
Is that what drives you to be, in the context of how we're speaking with you tonight, an ambassador, someone who's a patron of street work, for instance, a director of Wesley Mission? Is that what drives
you? Hopefully it's naturally in your heart. You know, if you look at the way Christ lived, and at the end of the day, to be a Christian is to be more Christ-like, to follow what Paul wrote about in 2/3 of the New Testament. And he always went after becoming more Christ-like. if you look at the life that Christ lived in his three-year ministry, he was always doing good works. He was out there healing. He was touching people. He was forgiving people. He was pointing towards his Father. You know, if we're going to live lives where we can bless other people, then we have to have that same, what the Bible calls agape love, unconditional love. So it's very easy to accept an offer for an organization, a great Christian organization like Wesley Mission that does fantastic work to a needy community across many aspects. It's a terrific organization, and I've been privileged to be involved in that. It's also easy to put up your hand and be patron of a group like Streetwork that is, again, through the wonderful transforming potential of Christian love, to go out and touch young, particularly boys, but young kids who are falling through the cracks in life.
It's very much put you in touch with a life that you have not necessarily had much personal contact with as a former Wallaby captain.
Sure, not up close and what have you. And you know, I live in a life where, from growing up to school to university to my working life, you know, 10 years as a lawyer, 15 years as an investment banker, now as a fund manager, I don't see it up close. But you certainly see it up close, you know, when you go to, you know, Wesley's homeless centres like Edward Eagle Lodge. You see it up close when you see some of the young boys and girls who are coming out of gangs and constantly in the police office, and you can see it turned around. And I got to say, Lee, I'm very comfortable. I had a wonderful privilege largely through the game of rugby to meet some amazing people, you know, some of the best known people in the world. And I feel extremely comfortable around them, but I feel just as comfortable around people who are doing it tough on life's journey. I feel extremely comfortable. So, you know, I don't know if it's something I have got out of my relationship with God, but I feel really comfortable trying to reach out, touch those people and support them.
As you engage with them, as you get to know them, what do they teach you about life's journey?
Oh, look, I think that you just got to understand, there by the grace of God go I. You know, the opportunity that my parents gave me, the sacrifice they gave me, an education, the love, the family tightness and bonding. I mean, I've had a wonderful Christian wife. We've been together for 30 years. We've been married for over 23. So I feel hugely blessed. And I suppose that, again, as a Christian, I mean, I don't think about it regularly, but you'd like to think it's natural, and that I like to reach out and touch people. I mean, at the end of the day, when I check out, I want to be able to look back and say that I made a difference in some people's lives. And every one of those lives is just as important to God as the people in very high places.
Is that something you're able to instill into your children? And if so, how might you do that?
You know, my kids, being the children of Nick and Angela Farr Jones, they grew up going to church. They know the gospel of Jesus Christ. At the end of the day, we all know they've got to make their own decisions. You know, my eldest daughter's 22. My youngest is 13 of my four children. I mean, they've got to make their own decision. They've got to work it out for themselves. And it's not something that you're going to ram down their throats. I don't talk actively about, you know, what I might be doing on a day-to-day basis in some of the organizations that I'm involved in. But my kids, through being my kids, they see what I do in life. I emceed the Red Shield Appeal. We had 750 people at the West, and we raised over $2 million to launch the Salvo's Red Shield Appeal. My two girls were there. They've been helping me in some of those organizations. They hear, you know, the wonderful work of the Salvos and me talking about it. So they know what's in my heart.
They know where your heart is.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't need to speak to them directly. They know what my wife's like as well. The care she has, the way she reaches out. She's later this year organizing a big schools event where she wants to see revival in some of the schools about the Holy Spirit and Christianity. So my children see that up close and tight.
What's this ride been like for her? Through so many different experiences.
Yeah, look, it's been an interesting ride. She came from Adelaide. Her father, professor of radiology, went down to Adelaide sort of in the early 70s to set up the radiological practice at Flinders University. So Ange grew up from about the age of 8 in Adelaide, had 10 years down there, came up to Sydney University. We met when she was at Women's College at uni. I was across the oval at St Andrews College. We met in 83. It was the year I was playing second division rugby for Sydney University. So she knew, one, nothing about rugby. She had no idea whether I was capable. She actually was quite funny, Lee, a few months into our relationship. She was sitting at the number one oval at Sydney University alongside a couple of my college mates, and she just said, is Nick any good at this game? They said, oh, yeah, look, he's been playing first grade for a number of years, and, you know, we actually think he could go all the way and play for Australia. So Ange sort of believed them. She goes down to Adelaide, tells her father, who actually had a boy at King's and knows a lot about rugby and comes from Toowoomba Grammar. She said, oh, look, I've met this guy and we're going out and his mates think he's going to be a wallaby. And Ange's dad, yeah, sure, he'll be a wallaby, Ange, sure. A year later, I am, and he's on the tour for 10 weeks, so I'm what became known as the Grand Slam Tour. So it was quite interesting. But Ange, I raised that because Ange started at the Journey and lived that journey all the way through with me. So the dramatic rise for me, all of a sudden being selected to be a Wallaby, and then every opportunity in life that that's given us, the doors that have opened, many commitments you get. If I've got one weakness, it's I'm not very good at saying no. Is that a weakness? Probably not. Does it create chaos in your life sometimes? Yeah, but my wife's been very used to it. And I think we've coped pretty well. And we've tried to focus on family and the things that are important. Could you have done better? Could you have spent more time doing a few other things? Sure. Do I regret it? Not really.
What has enabled you to move together through so many different experiences that do change you? What's kept you together?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, the love that we have for each other, I think it's grown over all the years. You know, we try and keep it fresh. You know, we've got four great kids. Just all that sharing of those responsibilities that come in bringing up kids, that you hopefully give them every opportunity to participate in life, but you teach them the important things in life that we've just spoken about. It sort of just comes natural to us. I am hugely blessed by having my wife. I just hope that together we again can be a testament to what it's like in a marriage to have a relationship with God.
It's wonderful. Nick Farr-Jones, thoroughly enjoyed meeting you and having a great chat. Thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House.
My pleasure, Lou.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.